You are tuned in to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Dr. Richard Sauter, Ph.D. Richard is the author of 5 books and major reports, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit so that you'll get familiar with them. His latest book, published in 2010, is called Hidden in Plain Sight, Beyond the X-Files. It's his latest work on the secret world of underground bases and tunnels, which we'll be discussing tonight, among other things. The underground bestseller, Underground Bases and Tunnels, What is the Government Trying to Hide, is his first work on the underground bases issue, published in 1995. The Esoteric Kundalini Tales, in 1998, deals with paranormal and mind control themes. Underwater and Underground Bases, in 2001, expands the scope of his earlier work to include military plans for manned bases and tunnels beneath the seafloor. The Sauter Report, Notes from the Underground, is soon to be made available and is a 770-page compilation of many of the raw technical, military, and government documents on which the nuts and bolts engineering aspects of his research are grounded. Links to his site and to his books for purchase will remain up on here, my site, the bio, for several days, so be sure to check it out. And on his website, he has numerous articles and free videos that back up and inform what we'll be talking about tonight. And I'm sure you'll want to get more into this, and you'll definitely want to have his book, Hidden in Plain Sight. So let's bring him out of the underground and welcome him to the live show right now. Hi, Richard. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Lance. How about yourself?
I'm okay. The chemtrails kind of got in my lungs today, but I'm surviving.
Well, you know, there are a lot of chemtrails, and it's disturbing. I hope that whoever is spraying them, and it appears to be a multi-agency effort, would stop it, because I have to believe they're full of substances that are hazardous to health.
Absolutely. Well, I just have to say that reading your latest book, Hidden in Plain Sight, Beyond the X-Files, is a eye-opener. And it's really, you know, I've done a lot of research on these various subjects. They call them conspiracy theories, but at this point I just consider it all fact. And the sky's the limit in terms of what is possible when you reach a certain point in learning about the matrix in which we live. It's a bottomless pit and a Pandora's box. Which you were saying in one of your videos that I was just listening to before the show, largely is funded by black operations, theft, and there are trillions and trillions and trillions. I mean, you can't even imagine how much money is going into these projects. So,
astronomical. And I want to slightly amend your opening comments here and say,
Sure.
I have 2 new books this year. The second one is the Richard Sauter Briefing. Both of these books are linked at the bottom of your website if people want to go look. It's underneath my biographical information. And that book is available from Amazon.com. In that book, I lay out some of the massive ways in which we're being lied to. And that's one of the ways the ruling elite, the so-called powers that be, get over on us, is that they massively lie to us, feed us endless reams of misinformation, disinformation, propaganda, and outright fibs to our face, and they've been at it for thousands of years. And for the most part, people have swallowed the lies, amazingly enough, for year after year after year, for millennia after millennia. Well, until now, that is, each day, more and more human beings wake up to these lies. And I discuss these matters, some of these hidden projects, the ways in which they get over on us, and massively enrich themselves in the process at the same time that they are enslaving us economically, politically, socially, and in many other ways. And I don't know what to say except that if we don't do something soon, we are toast. And some of us, I mean, if there's a nuclear war, that'll be literal. Some of us will be, a lot of us would be radioactive toast if that were the case. and we are really at a crucial crossroads in human history. You and I were talking just before we went on the air, and you alluded to the Hopi teachings that essentially said at this period of time, the human race would come to a crossroads in history, so to speak. And we either have to choose a better path or spiral down to a grim future of destruction and oppression. That's our choice. Frankly, we'll choose one or the other road. There's not really any viable middle ground. When I, as some of your listeners may know and others may not, earlier this year I traveled to North Dakota and went over the fence onto a nuclear missile silo near Minot Air Force Base and staged a peaceful, nonviolent demonstration because we are at grave risk of global war this year, this fall and this winter. And if we do have a global war, because of the level of armament and the large number of nuclear weapons in the hands of nation states, the United States and others, there's every possibility that some of those weapons are, God help us, maybe many of them could come into play. And if that happens, the outcome will not be pleasant, I promise you.
Yeah.
So I'm aware of this, and other people are too. I went directly to a nuclear missile silo and went over the fence essentially to say, not my name. I'm putting my body and my life physically on the line. In other words, I went right to the site where nuclear weapons are deployed, went over the fence onto a Minuteman nuclear missile silo and said, I vote no. You know, and what are you going to do? You're going to write a letter to the editor? Well, it may not even get published.
Right.
And if it does, comparatively few people will read it. Or you could write a letter to your congressman, and he certainly will not read your letter.
Huh. Right.
One of the junior members of his staff may or may not send you a, you know, form letter in response. And that's about the extent of your redress in this system. So I took matters into my own hands, and I voted with my feet. I went directly to a nuclear missile silo and said, no, I know what you're planning to do. I know what these weapons can do. I know what the result will be if you carry out your plans and you use these weapons. And I beg to differ. I object. I don't agree. I personally vote against it with my life. And, of course, I was arrested for that. I was handcuffed and chained and criminally tried, and I spent over 3 months in jail in North Dakota. And I'm here to tell you that if more members of the human race don't wake up, and I mean not 10 years from now, I mean right now, this week, this month, this fall, we need to do a, if not a U-turn, a sizable turn from the direction in which we're headed, because all that is necessary for evil men to triumph is for good men and good women to do nothing or to remain silent. You know, under the law, if you're silent when there's a crime being committed, if you're silent or you do nothing, you are presumed to have acquiesced in the crime and to be an accomplice.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, here we are. Here we are. We have knowledge that a great crime is being prepared. We even have knowledge that we have materially aided and abetted it by sending in our tax money to the government every April 15th. What do you think is done with that money?
Well,
I'm saying is,
yeah.
if you are funding the system, if you are money into the system every year, you're helping to fund it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So the system, there's a karmic question here then. For all of us who are tied up in this, if you send money into the system and they turn around and use that money to fund their operations, guess what? When they go forth and slaughter, using your funding in part, that karma comes back. I mean, it's like sticky glue, if you will.
Yeah.
And so that's the issue for this society as a whole. You get what you pay for. So it's time for us to ask, in fact, well past time, high past time, for us to ask, what, pardon my French, what the hell have we paid for? And the answer is, over the past half century, among other things, this society has spent $5 trillion building up a huge nuclear arsenal with thousands of nuclear weapons,
yep.
And they're ready to go. They're ready to go. That is a moral issue. So I voted against it. And what I'm challenging your listeners, if you don't want this to happen, if you don't want nuclear war, if you don't want the United States to just nuke the living bejeebus out of Iran or some other country, guess what? You need to do something. You personally need to do something. You need to say something. Silence isn't good enough.
Well, I agree with you. And there are many forms of protests that I think are going to be easy to figure out once the problem is identified. You know,
I just identified one of the biggest problems on the planet. And I'll grant you, there are many different forms of protest, and there are many different forms of not cooperating with the system, which is just, it's diabolical, Lance.
Oh,
and
I know.
Once you awaken to that, as a being with a conscience, with a human conscience, you're faced with the issue of, how do I not cooperate with this? How do I not go along with this? How do I vote against it, so to speak? How do I publicly object to it? Because we're responsible to do that. We really are.
Well,
and
no, here, one of the problems that I think, I agree with you 100,000%, but one of the problems is that most people aren't even aware of what they're not aware of. Now, for instance, in your book, you have diagrams and plans of underground bases and maglev tunnels and things, which I'm certain exist all over the world, and you demonstrate that, and probably even more. All of these projects are absolutely beyond top secret, and nobody knows about them. They're covert.
Well, some people do.
I'm just saying, yes, but those people aren't as important as the masses who are just watching Fox News and buying it and thinking that that's the world they live in. There's a whole underground subterranean world with stuff that we can't even imagine.
That's the point, and it goes beyond this. There are many underground bases, and there are thousands of people working in them. There are all kinds of secret projects and programs going on down there. And also undersea facilities, as my latest research shows. But beyond that, there are many other, if you will, scams and schemes and secret projects and massive lying and propaganda campaigns that have been going on for decades or even centuries. And I discuss some of these other ones in my book, The Richard Souter Briefing. So both of these books, for the uninitiated, I lay out, you know, I give you approximately a little less than 300 pages of documented ways that these black projects and the powers that be have gotten over on us, and they're sucking trillions of dollars out of the global economy.
Oh, yeah.
They are absolutely impoverishing the human species on planet Earth.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They are, in the process, they're also destroying the ecology.
Exactly. And they're using the money that they're demanding from us, which is turning us into third world country, which is used to enslave us. So it's really quite ironic.
In fact, that's the title of one of the opening chapters in my little book, The Richard Souter Briefing. I entitle it, The Planned Economic Enslavement of All Humanity. The attempted economic enslavement of all humanity.
Well, we're enslaved right now. We were born into it.
Well, that's right. But you know what? The plan is to extend it to everyone on the earth, and that's why they go after these so-called Stone Age cultures in the Amazon or whatever. That's why the logging companies go into places like Indonesia and Malaysia, Amazon.
And they're destroying the indigenous cultures, as you know.
Well, they destroy the
giving the Indians infected blankets and wiping out the true knowledge, the ancient knowledge that connects us to natural sources and to the earth and to all things.
That's right. There are still some cultures, their numbers are dwindling, but there's still some cultures that have that natural attachment to living earth, who live off of the earth and are in tune with the natural ecology. And these diabolical demons, who are the powers that be, are deeply threatened by that. They are deeply threatened by the natural life process of the earth and by people and peoples who are in tune with it. So their solution to that is to eliminate them, to annihilate them,
and
slay the survivors.
And exactly. Now, Richard, I have a question for you. Obviously, this has been going on for hundreds of years, and we could probably easily trace it back to the last war and Project Paperclip and so on and so forth. But what I want to ask you is, since all of this stuff has been going on and trillions of dollars is going into all of these different special projects, and since, as one of my other guests said, even the president's clearance only goes up to about 23, and there's another 30 or 40 levels above that, and the top brass are not allowed to know certain things. They can't even go to Area 51 because it's not a need to know. So who is running the show? Who has access to these maglev trains that connect the world's underground and all of these exotic projects and possibly ET research?
Well, you know, I think the answer is complex. Number one, there are multiple factions who control what happens on this planet or who attempt to control it. And so the answer to your question is not simple. It means that depending on the project, depending on the technology, depending on what is being done, different individuals or factions or organizations or agencies would have access to it or would have knowledge of it.
Right.
And that would apply even within an agency such as the Pentagon and the United States Military Command, where you have different military agencies. You have the Army, the Marine Corps, the U.S. Navy, Air Force. And they vie for funding and access and resources and personnel among themselves. And then you have to understand that the CIA has its own clandestine cells embedded.
Oh, my God.
Several hundreds of clandestine cells embedded within the military structure, okay?
And many then you don't have, know, yeah,
and then,
each other.
And then, well, it goes beyond that. And then you have the contractors that are embedded, such as Blackwater, now known as XE, and others. And then you also have the corporations who interface with both the contractors and with the military agencies. And so you have all of that going on within just one department of the federal government, which is the Pentagon, and that's just one agency within one of the larger governments on the planet. So you see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and,
I do.
And then there would be multiple programs and projects going on. The Army has its own underground facilities. The Navy has its own underground facilities. The Air Force has its own underground facilities. Then there are the underwater facilities, where I've been told, you know, that corporations and the United States Navy, and then others as well.
And then what about the second space program that is?
Well, let's get to that in just a second.
Okay.
But then you also have, the anecdotal evidence strongly suggests that you have various extraterrestrial or alien factions here as well.
Right.
Who also have an underground and undersea presence in their own bases, and then sometimes jointly with clandestine terrestrial human factions, such as various clandestine factions in the United States military. So it's extremely complex.
Yes.
Now, as to the secret space program, yes, it does appear that there is not only a secret space program, but there may be more than one secret space programs, plural. And those would be run, the information that I have from a variety of sources suggests that the secret space programs at a minimum, would be run by a consortium of the most powerful aerospace companies.
Yeah.
And also, it would be run by clandestine elements within the military structure in the United States, you know, the Navy and other agencies. The Navy has some very advanced technology. Really advanced technology. And then, of course, you quite possibly have the same scenario in other major countries like Russia and China and Japan, all of whom have their own space programs. And then you have the European Space Agency. So you could see there, too, you have the possibility for multiple space programs using not only chemical rocket technology, but probably electrogravitic technology for non-conventional modes of propulsion as well.
Yeah.
And there's circumstantial evidence that points in that direction. And I would, my best bet would be that all of that is happening and that an agency like NASA it's a real space agency. And for decades, it has been putting up satellites and interplanetary probes and also asteroid rendezvous missions, as well as manned missions, dozens of them over the last few decades. So it does have a real space program, but it seems to me, from the totality of what I have seen, read, and been told, that there are probably at least a couple of other secret space programs with their own technology, their own astronaut corps, and massive funding, but this would be from the black budget. It would be off the books.
Mm-hmm. It really begs the question, what is the end game? What is the point to all this? This exponential taking over with the military-industrial complex, at some point it's like they're bacteria or viruses going through this beautiful planet of ours, this natural habitat, and they're just simply terraforming it and turning it into a virtual reality or something. Where is this supposed to all end with us all?
Maybe with death of the planet, and you're right, they are essentially like vampires or leeches, parasites. They're sucking our life juice out.
Yeah.
You know, Dwight Eisenhower warned about this just before he left office half a century ago, and he warned about the danger of the growing power of the military-industrial complex and what a threat it was to our way of life. People didn't listen to him then. A lot of people still aren't listening to him, and the military-industrial complex has only grown more powerful in the decades since he left office. It's now very large. It's funded by the hundreds of billions, if not the trillions.
Interfaces with the drug cartel money and the mafias and the Vatican. It goes on and on, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. very much so. And again, I discuss this in the Richard Souter briefing, and I point out how organized crime does interface with and work with national governments, including the United States government, and with the alphabet soup. In fact, when the CIA went into, not the CIA, but the forerunner of the CIA, the OSS, went into Italy during World War II, it made common cause with Italian organized crime. So already starting in the World War II era, there was a very close working relationship between organized crime and the United States intelligence services. That relationship continues to this day. The federal alphabet soup, the alphabet soup agencies, and organized crime continue to work together. It's a way to move around personnel, hitmen, and alphabet soup agencies absolutely assassinate people. So
now, this is all known at the highest levels of our own government.
Well, and they move around. They move around a lot of money across borders.
Right.
They move around hit men and other gangsters.
Right.
They traffic personnel and other people across borders. They traffic all kinds of contraband, narcotics, and weaponry. You name it, they're doing it. But what it amounts to is that, in a sense, the United States government to a large degree, is simply one more criminal syndicate, albeit
right.
a very large one.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I couldn't agree with you more. Now, the question is, this all can't go on. We know this. You're also a very deeply spiritual person, and I read your Kundalini tales, and they're very, very moving, and they take you to places that that I wouldn't have been to on a spiritual level. So, is this a spiritual divide, a divide between spirit and materialism? And, I mean, obviously there's no time for anyone to begin, even if we instantly knew everything you know, that doesn't even cover what we don't know or what we don't know we don't know. And
I know only a small, in fact, the more I learn, the more I realize how very little I do know. I know a great deal more than I used to.
Yeah.
I mean, I know vastly more than I used to. But in the process of learning vastly more than I used to know, I have come to understand how very little I know. And that's humbling. In fact, it's a hallmark of gaining knowledge. If you're wise as you gain knowledge, the more you learn, the more you understand how little you know.
Absolutely.
I'm not saying you shouldn't learn. I think every human being should learn as much as possible about virtually everything. I think that's one of the most important aspects of being human, the opportunity to learn, to know, to understand. It's a great privilege and at the same time a great responsibility. There's no end to it, literally. Intellectual curiosity is one of the hallmarks of a mature human being in my view.
Absolutely, yeah.
But so few people in our society have it, and we're suffering for that reason. Now, you asked earlier, where is this going? Where does it end?
Right.
Well, if it ends badly, it ends in the death of the planet and perhaps the annihilation of the human race, because what we see are very dark, diabolical plans that are in motion.
Yep.
I mean, look at it. We are seeing massive pollution and contamination of the world's oceans. I offer as Exhibit A, the British Petroleum kill shot, essentially, with the failure of their Deepwater Horizon oil rig in the Gulf of Mexico this past spring. The devastating of that catastrophe are with us to this day, and the effects will continue to be out for years to come. It's just been a catastrophe for the ecology of the Gulf of Mexico,
Richard, can I ask you a quick question now? Because you mentioned how is it possible that that's tied into your material that you wrote on page 42 and 43 of your book, Hidden in Plain Sight, where you talk about an underground base in the Gulf of Mexico that may go.
I don't know. I don't think that the Deepwater Horizon accident was pertaining to an undersea base per se. Now, my information indicates that there are undersea bases in the Gulf of Mexico. However, I think that that was a purposeful attempt by British Petroleum to drill into a very high-pressure undersea deposit of oil and natural gas with the intention to rupture that subsea deposit and let it out. In other words, I think that British Petroleum consciously and with great malevolence set out to cause great damage and harm to the Gulf of Mexico. That's my personal opinion. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Well before this drilling well blew, they had indications weeks, my understanding is even months before that, that they were dealing with a dangerously high-pressure formation down there, that it was very gassy, and they proceeded to keep drilling, and even as they drilled into this deposit, they had indications long before it blew out that the pressure was very high, that it was dangerous, that the well ran the risk of a blowout, and still they kept drilling, and for that reason I say in the face of a known danger and known catastrophe, they proceeded anyway with reckless abandon. In my book, that means that they knew there was a good chance it was going to happen and went ahead anyway, suggesting that it was done on purpose.
These absolutely
are devious beings, and it's a dark agenda. I'm not surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if the agenda at a certain level is to kill the planet, to render it uninhabitable.
That scorched earth policy, if certain ET factions are not going to get their way, they're going to leave the planet absolutely uninhabitable with every human and life form dead. That seems to be what's happening anyway. There's a lot of talk about
that. Let me tell you, I'm not the only person who has warned the danger of nuclear war this year. As you may know, if you read the news, Fidel Castro, the former head of state in Cuba, twice this summer called the National Assembly into session to give them a speech warning precisely of that, of the very real danger of nuclear war this year. And there are others who have also sounded the alarm of global nuclear warfare.
It was interesting that Ahmadinejad, I think I boggled that one, was talking openly, as many Europeans and Middle Easterners do, outside of our country where we're controlled and don't get information, that 911 was an inside job.
Well, of course it was. He was trashed by the mainstream news media in this country. However, he's right. There's a lot of evidence to suggest that it was an inside job. And beyond that, when you examine the story as put forth, so-called official story, as put forth by the United States government, that story cannot be true as told because there are so many unexplained discrepancies in it. So whatever the truth about what happened on 9/11 is, it cannot be the official story as put forth publicly by the United States government. So Ahmadinejad is right. The story that the United States government has told is fishy, should not be believed, and should be questioned by any thinking person. I'm certainly questioning it, and deeply. So here's again a case where the president of Iran was demonized by the American news media, but at least on that score, he's more truthful than the president of the United States.
Say, listen, Richard. I know that you. I'm with you on atomic nuclear weapons. Every one of them should be completely broken down and dismantled. However, have you noticed the last few days there's been a lot of internet chatter about the interview, the various interviews? That was some kind of conference. It might have been Dr. Stephen Greer's conference that was made some months or years ago, in which major generals and admirals and people who are now retired testified that at the silos and the sites where these nuclear weapons are located, they saw ET ships or lights, and that in many instances the base was shut down and they were rendered inoperative.
The nuclear missiles were deactivated, at least
yes.
For a time.
Yeah.
Well, that's true, and that was actually a press conference at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. about 1 or 2 weeks ago. And that was organized by Robert Salas and I think another gentleman named Robert Hastings, something like that. They are UFO activists. And there were several former military officers and military personnel who testified publicly to what they saw and experienced, and it's clear that some and maybe many of these so-called alien or ET groups or whoever they are that are flying the UFOs are alarmed at the prospect of nuclear war, and they have time and again come to military installations where nuclear missiles or other nuclear weapons were either stored or actively deployed for being used or fired, potentially. And they have surveilled these weapons and these sites, and on multiple occasions they have actually shut down the missiles or rendered the warheads inoperable. And this happened again and again. So it's clear that it's not only me, not only Fidel Castro, but evidently ETs and extraterrestrials who are also alarmed at the prospect of nuclear war. So I have to say, whoever these beings or people are, hey, I'm voting with them.
And yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
If they have my best interests more in heart than these dark beings that are called the powers that be, then I'm going to come down on the side of these beings who are rendering nuclear weapons inoperable.
Absolutely.
You know, they're horrific, and they really can't be used. People who imagine that we can somehow have a shooting nuclear war and we'll come through it okay, they have no concept of what kind of hell it would be.
Absolutely. I mean, it really would be the end of life. And
Maybe not the end of all life, but
people with two heads and one arm, and you've seen the babies that come out from the sites that we've been testing limited nuclear dirty bombs over in those other countries.
Fire depleted uranium ammunition.
Yes. Yeah, we're doing that all the time.
Yes.
And, using
a horrific birth defect.
Yeah,
I can't even hardly look at those pictures. They're just heart-rending.
Oh, it makes
This again comes down to karma.
Listen,
the people of this country send their sons and daughters into the military. Our children go to other countries and fire those depleted uranium munitions at other people on the other side of the planet. And that radioactivity gets in the air and the water and the soil, and it causes just horrific, gut-wrenching birth defects and just hideous, grotesque deformities in the babies that are being born over there. That bad, evil karma is on our heads because we send our children to do that to others. We pay our money to the government that uses our money to do that. We salute the flag and we say the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag that waves over the tanks that fire those weapons. That bad, evil, satanic karma is on our heads, and we better wake the F up, if you pardon my French. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. And let me tell you something about karma. It's a boomerang. And when we fling those karmic boomerangs, and we've been flinging them for decades now, they always come back. Always come back. If you send out good karma, guess what? It's going to come back to you. If you send out bad karma, guess what? It's going to come back to you and land on your head like a bag of radioactive hammers.
Yeah.
So if we are sowing radioactive poison on the other side of the planet, guess what? Figure it out, Lance.
Well, yeah, it's all going to come back to us because everything is interconnected, and we are them and they are us, and you can't separate out one person as a, you know, what we do to somebody else, we're doing to ourselves, and ultimately we're all going to feel the effects of it, and we'll all
remember what people in the United States said after World War II about the Germans. Hey, your government, during the Third Reich committed all these crimes. Don't you tell us you had nothing to do with it.
Right.
Your children were fighting in the army that did this. You were supporting it. You voted for Hitler. You paid money to the German government. That was your money that did this. Your children had carried out these crimes under your flag that you saluted, under your national leadership that you voted into power. Don't you tell us you had nothing to do with it. That's what we told to the German people after World War II. So how can we then exempt ourselves from the same standard?
Well, we can't. So what do you see as a positive way that the individual can learn how to integrate this information, and what can we ourselves do, and what is a wise course of action?
Well, you know, I have to talk about the White Rose movement. White Rose, as in white roses. I acted when I went to North Dakota as part of the White Rose movement, which is a decentralized, and decentralized means there's no central headquarters anywhere. There's no individual or organization that's in charge of the White Rose movement. It's, you know, each one reach one. Anyone listening to this broadcast can act as part of the White Rose movement if he or she wants to. The White Rose movement is nonviolent. Nonviolent. In other words, if violence is the problem, nonviolence is the solution. That's one of the things that this system wants to do. Part of the propaganda is the way you get things done is with violence. And the greater the violence, the more you get done. And that's false.
Yeah.
That's false. But that's the meme that's put, the war meme.
That's right.
Put out.
Well,
there's another meme that the White Rose movement puts out, and that is, if violence is the problem, then the antidote is nonviolence. But a principled nonviolence. Not a cowardly nonviolence, but a brave nonviolence. The type of nonviolence that says, you know what, I'm willing to put everything on the line, which is what I did when I went over to the fence onto the nuclear missile silo. I knew they would come for me with weapons, and they did. They were heavily armed. I ran the risk of being shot, perhaps even killed. At the least, I mean, I ran the risk of being arrested and sent to jail.
Yeah.
And I ran the risk of all of that. I paid a price. I did, and the FBI impounded my minivan and personal property. It cost me a lot of money, a chunk of time out of my life, a major inconvenience, and a criminal conviction, etc. So I paid a price.
Yeah.
And a fairly heavy one at that. However, what is the price we're going to pay if these weapons are used? I submit it'll be infinitely greater than the small price I paid to play the role of Paul Revere, which essentially was, hey, everybody, wake up. What are you doing? Don't just sleepwalk into this thing. Wake up while there's still time. And there is still time, but not much is what I'm telling
you. Not a lot.
The White Rose movement stems from the White Rose during Nazi Germany, during the Third Reich. During World War II, there was a group of young university students and professors in Germany who were opposed to the war and were opposed to the Third Reich, and they began a leafleting campaign against the war and against the Third Reich. Now, it wasn't violent. They just put out their leaflets, set them out at universities and places where people gathered against the war and against the Third Reich. Eventually they were found out, and they were arrested. Some of them were jailed, some of them were tortured, and some of them were executed. One of the most famous members of the Third Reich, of the White Rose, and their symbol was the White Rose, was a young woman named Sophie Scholl, S-C-H-O-L-L. And she actually very bravely went to her death at her trial. Just before her execution, she very forthrightly spoke up against the Nazi judge who berated her for not supporting the Third Reich.
No.
And she essentially told him not only that she did, but that she was glad she did. She didn't understand. She couldn't comprehend how he could possibly support such an evil regime. Of course, this infuriated him, and he sentenced her to have her head cut off. And it was shortly thereafter, but after she was sentenced, she spoke words to the effect of, what a fine and glorious day to die. So she was brave and unrepentant to the very end. That's their example. I'm not telling you that anyone should aspire to have their head cut off. That's not a pleasant fate, but I'm telling you that if a whole lot more of us don't find some courage and stand up and speak out and even go over the fence at nuclear missile silos and say, no, sir, no, ma'am, there will not be a nuclear war on my watch, because I beg to differ, and I personally, in person, with my life, I vote against it. Unless we reach that point, you know what? Bad things can happen.
Absolutely.
And they will happen. They will happen because we've given our power away. And how do you reclaim your power? By standing up and publicly saying, I'm taking my power back. I am a sovereign human being. What I say, what I do matters as much as anyone else. And therefore, I act on my own sovereign authority. I don't want a nuclear war to occur. Therefore, I have come here to publicly and nonviolently vote against it. So the White Rose Movement is fiercely courageous. It is nonviolent. It doesn't support war. White Rose Movement is willing to take great risk for great gains. If we as a species are going to make great gains, you know what? You don't get something for nothing. You follow me?
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Your achievements are in proportion to your efforts. So if you're not putting forth an effort, nothing's going to happen.
If you want
good things to happen, then you have to do good things.
We definitely need more people that are not acting out of ignorance and fear and anger. But we also need more people that are awakened, enlightened beings who are in unified consciousness, who are on the same page. And,
well, that's the key thing.
And
there's plenty of room. There's plenty of room for maneuver. I talk about the White Rose in the last page or two of the Richard Sauter briefing. One of the things that I see the White Rose movement doing, and by the way, there was a group of Roman Catholic activists, anti-war activists, who went out to the Creech Air Force Base in Nevada last year. And that's the Air Force Base from which they pilot the Predator drones in Afghanistan and Pakistan. They pilot them from there, and they kill people in Afghanistan and Pakistan. So these drones are remotely piloted from this Creech Air Force Base in Nevada. And the drones just killed hundreds, maybe thousands of people. Many of them are just innocent bystanders who had nothing to do with anything other than they got in the way of the American military machine at the wrong time on the wrong day, and so they were blasted to smithereens. Well, this group went out and committed civil disobedience at Creech Air Force Base last year in the name of the White Rose. So my activity is not the only activity in recent years in the United States in the name of the White Rose, and I'm telling you, we can profitably draw inspiration from these young Germans and their great courage in World War II and apply it our day. The White Rose exists to this day. I'm not the only person acting in the spirit of the White Rose. Anyone can. You know, I took a bouquet of 3 dozen white roses and set it out right by the nuclear missile silo when I went. And when the Air Force showed up, they just threw the white roses on the ground. Well, you see, their agenda is not beauty and aesthetically pleasing things.
Right.
Their agenda is death and destruction.
Yeah.
So they don't want no stinking beauty. That's a nuclear missile silo.
Yeah.
It's designed to kill millions of people, and that's it. It's not beautified in any way. It's starkly utilitarian. It is a genocidal weapon facility. End of story. Well, I took some white roses, in essence, to tell the United States military, number one, remember what happened in Nazi Germany, those young people the Nazis killed and sent to prison and tortured? Well, you know what? I read history, and I know what they did, and I know that there's a fascist or a neo-fascist regime in this country now, and you know what? Just like those young Germans that were killed and tortured and jailed over half a century ago, I agree with them in what they did. And in our day, in our time, in our society, we're also faced with a government and a military machine that are running amok. They're berserk. They've lost their minds. God help them.
Yep.
And we need to help them. And we need to take roses. We need to take bouquets of white roses to these people and say, The White Rose Movement is here to help you find your mind and find your heart. You have a human heart. You've lost touch with your heart. We're here to help you get in touch with your heart. You know what? War is a dead end. It's a dead end. The only way for us to stop this warring is to turn to nonviolence. And the way you do that is you go out with a bouquet of white roses and you say, you know what? I have a different plan, a different idea. I and my friends do. There's a different way. We don't have to slaughter each other. We don't have to have this tremendously oppressive, enslaving economic system. We don't have to trash the world's ecosystems and ecology. There's an entirely different path we can take, the White Rose path, the White Rose movement, and that's what I'm advocating on.
Well, of course, the movie Avatar stated visually that what's happening beautifully in this military-industrial takeover of basically the metaphor for the planet was, you know, that they were destroying the planet for this unobtainium, and that's exactly what's happening here. But it took a lot of to see what they were doing, and they weren't going to stop. It was just all about death and destruction after a certain while, and it was.
Vance, the only way this stops is if we stop it. They are incapable of stopping themselves.
Oh, yes. Oh, totally.
The only way that stops is if we stop it. And we don't stop it by acting out violently. And I want to emphasize this. Violence is the problem.
Well,
so
I agree.
Reacting violently only compounds the problem.
Well,
so all these people out there who say, we got to take up arms, we got to have a militia.
No.
You know
what if we pull the plug on the economical part of it and stop buying all these products that are being hacked and shoved down our throats and the latest amazing machine that's going to make your life wonderful? If we simply turned off our televisions and stopped buying cars that aren't feasible for this planet, that use oil, if we stop buying things that are that have environmental impact. If we just stop buying things, period, wouldn't that?
Well, that's one of the things that's going to happen.
Well, it's going to have to happen.
Yes, if we're going to have any type of human or humane planet, the movement has already started in that direction. I see, and from the White Rose's perspective, there's a number of things that people can do, and a lot of people have already started doing. Withdraw your support from the military machine.
Right.
Don't send your sons and daughters to serve in the military.
Right.
Don't serve the military yourself.
Right.
Defund the United States government. Frankly, it's out of control.
Oh.
Don't send money to the IRS. We need
yeah.
to have a national movement of people who just don't send money to the IRS anymore. And are willing to stand up and say, you know, I've stopped sending money to the IRS because it's a criminal syndicate designed to take down this country and
it's illegal.
it's
not even a legal enterprise.
And pull your money out of the big banks.
Right.
The
exactly. Exactly. Pull it out.
If you have an account at the Bank of America, well,
leave $100 in there.
Or not even
right.
that.
Let them
just
play with
pull
that.
Pull it out of there.
I agree.
Don't pay back your federal student loan. I mean, they'll make all kinds of dire threats. We're going to throw you in jail, et cetera, et cetera. But from the standpoint of the White Roses movement, the attitude has to be, this system is irretrievably corrupt. It runs off of stolen money. So just defund it. Start pulling money out of the system. And then there's room also for principled, nonviolent civil disobedience. And of course, that brings the risk of, you know, jail or being
tasers and
even, all of that.
Microwave weaponry and all that,
Perhaps even being shot. But you know what? We saw an example of that in the 1950s and 60s in our country. And black people, and a lot of white people too, went out by the thousands and committed civil disobedience. And if it weren't for that, we might
That's
still
right.
have racial segregation in this country today.
That's
and there
right.
were laws There were laws in many states in this country mandating racial segregation, and it was only when thousands of people, black people, but also a lot of white people, stood up.
Well, now
and said,
the segregation
you know
is the rich people versus the poor
yeah.
people, and anybody
that's
with less than $500,000 is considered a poor person.
That's right. That's right. So,
and we're being pushed to the we're being pushed into the third world so fast that we'll be on bread lines before you know it, and the super elite and the wealthy will be sitting there laughing and.
That's right. So the issue from the standpoint of the White Rose is, can we learn from Dr. King's example and what happened down south and also in other areas around the country in the 1960s and 1970s? Can we also nonviolently put ourselves in the line for redress of legitimate grievances? I think we'd better, Lance.
Well, yes. I agree, because I mean, I thought we were at the final last line about 6 or 7 years ago, and I can say honestly now, time has run out. We're at about 11:59 and 59 seconds. So, in fact, the
yes.
show's at 11:59 and 59 seconds. So, you have
yes.
a couple, you have about a minute to finish up any thoughts that you'd like to share with the listeners, and mention again what your site is. So.
Yes. Well, people can go to keyholepublishing.com to find my books. They can also go to amazon.com to find my books, both the Richard Sauter Briefing and also Hidden in Plain Sight, Beyond the X-Files. And I would say, you asked who finally is behind all of this? I don't know. Some people speculate that the control structure extends off the planet. I don't know if it does or it doesn't. For sure, we have a diabolical control structure on this planet.
No question about it.
It's seeking to enslave us, and the only way to make yourself free is to not cooperate. And I'm recommending nonviolent cooperation, because these diabolical beings feed off of violence.
They feed off of violence. Exactly.
It's like a narcotic to them. So don't give them their fix.
That's right.
Don't give them the luxury of acting out violently, because you only ensnare yourself more tightly in the nefarious plan of planetary control when you act violently. So be smart. Whatever you do, be nonviolent. That's our only way out.
And as Mayor Baba said, be happy.
Yeah.
Richard, you've been wonderful on the show tonight, and I highly encourage that people get your books and get up to speed, and you've done all the homework for us, so you've made it very easy, and it's an interesting and fascinating read.
No other author is covering a lot of this information that I'm covering.
I applaud your work, and I'm so happy to see that somebody is out there speaking so openly about all this, and I look forward to reading your future works as well. And keep up the great work.
Thank you so much, Lance.
Thanks for being on the show.
Anytime.
All right. Good night, Richard, and good night, listeners. Stay tuned for Jim Gilliland at the East City Ranch. He probably has an interesting guest, lots of ships powering up. And thank you for listening, and this is a wrap. Good night, everybody.